I'd like to call the meeting of the Capital Investment Committee to order for April 17th. No quorum yet? No quorum. We'll wait for the minutes till we get a quorum. We have five bills today for informational hearings. And leading off today, House File 2611 is Representative Marquardt. And while Representative Marquardt is taking his seat, I should comment that we are using a new gavel today. Representative Albright's father made gavels out of what was this wood again, Representative Carlson?
What was the what?
The wood?
Black walnut.
Black walnut.
Yeah. Make sure you guys were paying attention last meeting.
We'll have those next.
So, anyway, a big thanks. A big thanks to Representative Albright's father for the very fine gift.
Mr. Chairman, were you in the committee when they told the history of where the black walnut came from?
Yes, Representative Carlson, I was.
The tearing down of an old barn.
Yes.
Literally built with black walnut.
They got the wood out of an old barn that was torn down. Made of black walnut.
Black walnut is such that I think I commented that the barn might have been worth more than the whole farm.
Probably. I did not comment on the black walnut tree that I put in my fireplace.
I got a barn you want to.
All right, moving right along. We now have a quorum. And so, Representative Dean, have you had time to peruse the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I would submit approval of the minutes.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. And now, Representative Marquardt.
So, thank
welcome
you
to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for moving us forward to accommodate the distance that these gentlemen have traveled. So House File 2611, I want to first of all say the bill you have before you, this was introduced last April. We do not now need subdivision 2 at this time, so there won't be any amendments that have to be made, but you can ignore the $2.3 million under Subdivision 2 and just focus on Subdivision 1. So what this bill does, it involves the city of Manoman, which is a city of about 1,200. It's the county seat of Manoman County. And besides serving its residents and two other townships, it also serves the county's only hospital and only nursing home. And this city has a major infrastructure problem in the fact that two of the three water wells that the city has currently are not operational. They have sewer mains and water mains that are 60 to 100 years old. They've had three sewer water main breaks within just the last month. And so what this bill would do is provide for three things. Number one, to either rebuild or completely get a new municipal city well. And then the second thing would be to replace or completely reconstruct up to 10,000 linear feet of water main. And then the third portion of the project would be to replace or fix 11,500 linear feet of sewer line. So it's kind of, you know, the situation where many cities are in right now dealing with infrastructure. So with that,
Representative Marquardt, you listed various options there. Would they all be covered by the $1.2 million?
Well, I'll let my testifiers explain that.
All right, thanks.
So those are the three potential uses of that. So thank you. And so I have Mayor David Weimer of the City of Manoman and City Administrator Mitch Berg here to testify. So I'll turn it over to the mayor.
Mr. Mayor,
thank
please.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm Dave Weimer. I'm the mayor of Manoman. I want to thank the committee, the chairman and the committee, for putting the time in for us to come here today. This is my first time I've ever been here, so this is going to be a new experience. My assistant is Mitch Berg, and he is my city administrator. and we are here for funding for $1.2 million for our city water system. That's which the funds will be matched by the city of Manoman. Okay, the city of Manoman is the sewer system that provides water and sewer, not just to the residents of the city of Manoman, but also provides water and sewer service to two neighboring townships and to the White Earth Reservation, which is one of the 11 federally recognized reservations in the state of Minnesota. We have potential health concerns that exist from the city being one of the 66 cities identified from the MDH as having human bacteria found in the water and in the supply of the systems in 2017. We've had a failure of two of our three municipal wells, which means the city's water system is exposed to bacteria forming within the system due to the lack of the water pressure pump through the city water mains. The EPA declared that there is a consideration of untreated sewage that's ending into the Wild Rice River that has also been declared an endangered waterway, both upstream and downstream, for the city of Manoman. Due to the damage given to a gate valve, it's overflowing in the city, it's overflowing the pipe in the city's sewer lagoon. Okay, the current piping is 60 to 100 years of age. The system has multiple water and sewer breaks, three of which occurred just within the last month, resulting in a leak of over 2 million gallons of water. Okay. The biggest problem with our piping is that it is that age. We did do a scoping of the piping. Our piping is in multiple conditions. There's piping that's oval. There's piping that is, the joints are breaking and cracking. There is places where there is dirt that is falling into the system, being leaked into it. And okay, so there's also the piping is coated and everything with asbestos. So we have to get rid of all that also. And it's actually taken out some of our pumps just due to the leakage coming into the water lines that have destroyed the pumps. So then in turn we have to, they're due for replacement. Okay, and we'll just get out. Okay, we've had one alone that possesses significant health and safety hazards, both due to the residents and the city's professionals that work on the water system due with the asbestos. Okay. Many of the water lines that are being replaced are either going to, the lead lines will be wrapped, have been wrapped with asbestos. Manoman is one of the six, we have six sewer lift stations, two of them that have undergone significant repairs in the past 3 months due to their age. The city is not only provides water and sewer system to the residents of Manoman, but also water and sewer service to the critical institutions of the only hospital, the only nursing home in the city, and we do also have the Shooting Star Casino, which is one of the largest employees in the region. They employ 900 people at this date. A lot of them are, and so they use a lot of water for that also. Okay, the Shooting Star is a hotel, is not only the largest employer in the state, but also serves as the county and the tribe's destination emergency shelter that proposes improvement. Purchase of an emergency generator to provide to the city the treatment plant and one of the wells in the event of a power failure is also being considered for repair of the emergency backups, which has became inoperable while being activated after the city's number two well was failed. And with that, my chairman, I will open up to questions.
Mr. Mayor, the same question I asked Representative Marquardt. The $1.2 million covers your various options, all of them.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mitchell Burke, City Administrator for City of Manoman. Basically, it won't. The actual testimony was up to the 10,000 linear feet of water. We had initially, when we scoped the project, we identified about $6 million of water and sewer needs. Because of the position of the city that we're in, we've decided to do different phases of the project. And so we are going to address with this funding the most dire of that 10,000 linear feet of water piping and 11,000 linear feet of sewer piping. That answers your question.
Okay, thank you. And where does, on the PFA list, do you know where you rank?
Yes, we rank roughly right in the middle, Mr. Chairman. We were, but having said that, this happened last year because PFA is about a year behind. And since that time, we've had the two wells go down, the lift station go down, as well as the cracking in the gate valve. We did ask PFA, we actually had Senator Labor Stump's recommendation to contact them. They had said that in order for us to be put on a higher ranking of the PL and IUP list, we would have to reapply. And given that the urgent needs for the funding is now and not next year or 2 years later, we've seeking some assistance through the legislative process today.
Okay, and I would advise you, Representative Marquardt, to make sure that PFA has been updated as to the current needs that seem to have grown more in the last year.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair. We'll do that.
Representative Ugla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is to the city administrator. How much money do you have in your reserve funds for your sewer and water?
Well, I will tell you, back in 2011, we had $1.2 million of cash in our water fund. Now we have negative $62,000. For the sewer fund, back in 2011, we had about $700,000, and now we're just shy under
$288,000. And let me, Mr. Berg?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Were the repairs, making repairs, is that where the money went?
Pretty much, yes. Over time, we've addressed multiple water main breaks, sewer main breaks, and so that funding has been dwindling over the past decade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my other question is, since your reserve funds now are depleted, have you raised your rates on the residents yet?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we actually have raised our rates, I'd say about 20 to 30%, probably within the past 5 years. And if I could digress a little bit, Mr. Chairman, you know, the medium income for the average city resident in Monoman's the medium household income is less than $35,000. In the two townships that we serve, we provide water and sewer service to several tribal housing developments, and the average medium household income for those developments are $20,000. And so we see residents paying and families paying up to 8% of their medium household income based on the current water and sewer rates that they're paying right now. And we also have a 22% delinquency rate, of which the Minnesota Rural Water Association has identified as 300% over that of the average Minnesota city.
One other one.
Representative Ogle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you talked to the tribe at all at Shooting Star to see if you can get any assistance from them in terms of some of these costs?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Bush.
Yes, we have. In fact, the tribe probably contributes 40% of the revenue to the Water and Sewer Fund, and as we've been increasing our rates, they have contributed too. I want to make a point here. You know, the Wailuk Nation is a nation that has over 18,500 band members. The gross profits of our casinos, probably about $120 million, of which the net profits are about $6 to $10 million. And so when we look at raising water rates to be even eligible for a PFA grant, I went to our CEO of our tribe, and I said that would eat up about, I believe that would have ate up $500,000. Which would equate to about 5% of their net operating revenue. So these are, you know, and for the tribe, you know, they're again serving 18,500 band members. They do not contribute or they're not paying taxes, and so these services go directly to support their tribal entities. We also have a concern just given the fact that if rates continue to escalate, being that they're a sovereign nation, that they could, in fact, go to the federal government and ask for permission to build their own water well. And that would have an adverse or worsening effect for our rate users in our community.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Ms. Dyson. I think as I looked at the bottom of their sheet, the improvement project, one of the things is purchase an emergency generator. Is there any issue with foundability for that portion?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, equipment is not typically bondable, but when it becomes a significant fixture with a useful life of greater than 10 years, permanently affixed, that then it is. So it sort of depends on what is what's going to be acquired, installed, and as you may recall, we have done a generator at least once before.
I don't remember that.
Well, maybe I remember. Anything more? Anything more?
No.
Any other questions? Any final comments, Representative Marquardt?
Well, just thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, you know, it's a community that, as you know, has a small tax base. And what they're trying to do is starting to phase in to try to repair an aging and very costly infrastructure system that serves a vital part of Mahnomen County. It's the county seat, and as I said, it serves the only hospital and nursing home in the county. So it's for the county, it's a big city. So any help from the state would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Next is House File 2566, mm-hmm. Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Howell, you want to present your bill?
Mr. Chair, House File 2566 is a bonding request for $1.25 million to appropriate for a on-grade or a grade crossing for pedestrians for County Road 75. County Road 75 basically splits the city of St. Joe in half. They have a lot of housing on the northern side of County Road 75, and most of the downtown city is on the southern part of the city. And the College of St. Benedict's there, as we've got students going back and forth. It's a real safety hazard. And so with me to explain the conditions a little bit further is City Councilman Dale Wick.
Welcome, Mr. Wick.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dale Wick. I'm a member of the St. Joseph City Council. Our mayor, Mayor Schultz, could not make it here today due to a work conflict, but I appreciate the time today to talk to you about a project request, which we believe is an important safety, economic, regional, and community project. St. Joseph is located just west of St. Cloud. We have a population of about 6,800 people with around 1,900 households. As Representative Howe mentioned, in addition to that, St. Joseph is home to the College of St. Benedict's and St. John's University just down the road. These two institutions add about 4,000 to our population during the school year and about 135,000 visitors per year to their different events. St. Joseph is also a trailhead to the Wobegon Trail going west and will soon connect to the Wake Park in St. Cloud to the east, I guess, once the snow melts. One of the issues St. Joseph residents and regional visitors face is Turns County 75. County 75 is a four-lane principal arterial roadway that bisects the city. MnDOT traffic data shows roughly between 18,000 and 23,000 vehicles travel that corridor each day. The high speeds and volumes on 75 create a barrier for pedestrians and bicyclists crossing between the northern and southern sides of the city. In response to residents' concerns crossing Highway 75, the city partnered with the St. Cloud Area Planning Organization and Stearns County to commission a study to determine the need as well as the best method and location for a crossing. As part of the study, public input was solicited, which solidified the dangers of crossing the highway. We also received comments during our 2017 comprehensive plan update to these concerns as well. This project includes construction of a bicycle pedestrian crossing under County Road 75. It will provide a safe connection between neighborhoods, business, and developments, but also a safe link to other locations within central Minnesota, as the Wobegon Trail connects to hundreds of miles of bike trails to the west and soon to St. Cloud to the east, providing a safe path for recreational activities, as well as providing alternative modes for commuting to work. As the economy grows, so will the traffic on this high-volume road. This summer, the county will be reconstructing County 75 through town. This provides an opportunity to build this underpass with minimal further impact to the community and to the people who travel this road daily. Safety for our residents and visitors is our top priority. We have worked with Stearns County to modify signal times and to increase the walking timers, but these mitigation efforts have not provided adequate security for pedestrians and bicyclists. The crossing is supported by our local Chamber of Commerce, as businesses are located on both sides of the highway. It is also supported by the College of St. Benedict. You should have a copy of the letter that they sent along in your packet. This idea for this project has been around since at least 2003. I've been on the council for 16 years, and I know it was talked about unofficially before that. The city cannot do planning or visioning session without it being brought up. One of the things that St. Joseph has is a significant financial constraints, as close to 40% of the property in the city is tax-exempt, but we do have regional sales tax money. The City Council has committed $1.5 million of that regional sales tax money as a match to this request, but we need your help in providing this important community and regional crossing so our residents and regional visitors have a safe and positive method to cross Highway 75. Thank you again for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Members, any questions or comments? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howard, the testifier. So is this a bridge or is it a tunnel?
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We talked about doing an overpass. In fact, I think the last two bonding sessions that we had this bill presented, we were thinking an overpass. But as they've done their engineering on it, they believe that a underpass, an actual tunnel across there, is actually the best method to make this happen and the safest and the cheapest. So that's why they've proposed a grade separation in that.
Representative Dean.
And if I understood the testimony right, this will happen at the in conjunction with other reconstruction along Highway 75.
Representative Howell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's correct. They're going to reconstruct County Road 75 this year, I believe, and this summer. And so as they reconstruct that, that's why it's important to get this thing done now.
So just one last question, Mr. Chair. So majority of this cost isn't actually the tunnel. The majority of the cost is the lead to and the lead up out of the tunnel?
Mr. Wick, Representative Howell.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the specifics on it as far as what the portions of it is, but there are certain grade paths that we need to get to get to both the Wobegon Trail and the city streets on the side. But that's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Representative Dean.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems as if the tunnel portion would actually not be super significant if it's done in conjunction with the road. It might be a third of the cost, and then the rest is going to be sort of the ramping down to the tunnel and the ramping back up out of the tunnel. I mean, it's sort of irrelevant, but I'm just trying to envision what that is and how $3 million gets eaten up by a tunnel.
Do you need to acquire land for this?
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, yes, there is some acquiring of land and right-of-way on the north side of the road. The city owns some of the stuff on the south side that's behind our fire department.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm curious about the timing. If I heard you correctly, you said the road upgrade would begin this summer. And if we enact a bonding bill, the likelihood of the bonds being issued in time for that construction might be somewhat of a question.
Did you say if we do a bonding bill?
if this is included in the bonding bill, let me correct.
Making sure.
Well, I'm hopeful of a bonding bill and even a bigger bonding bill than what we talked about the other night, but that's a different issue. Question, though, is the issuing of the bonds. When would the issuing likely take place? I'm just thinking of what the timing of the bonds would be relative to getting this plan for the construction.
I believe Ms. Dyson has an answer for us.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, under state statute, once the law is enacted that authorizes the issuance of the bonds, the money that has been appropriated fronted from the general fund to allow projects that are immediately able to go forward to proceed. But also they can, even if they don't need the money right then, if they just need the authority to go ahead and start incurring costs, they can enter into contracts after the grant agreements are made. So the issuance of the bonds itself is not the limiting factor. It's the enactment of the law that would authorize this spending and the issuance of debt.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't sound like timing would be an issue. That's why I was asking
a good point to bring up
the question. However, maybe another question, if I may, of Ms. Dyson, and that's
Representative Carlson.
There are some restrictions when you're paying back. So how does that interact then if construction has started and we're doing a payback with the issuing of the bonds?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the reimbursement issue is a federal tax law issue, but that applies when costs are being paid before the law is enacted. So once the law is enacted, as I understand it, the that federal tax law limitation on reimbursement is not an issue.
Okay. That answers both questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, then, thank you, gentlemen. Any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'll just emphasize that this is not the first time we've come to the committee with this project, and so I greatly appreciate your attention and giving the bill a hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 3342, Representative Neuberger. Representative Neuberger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have before you today House File 3342 for your consideration. It is a highway improvement project to improve access from Highway 10 into the industrial park of Becker, Minnesota. This improvement is something that we need to do because, as many of you are aware, we are losing two-thirds of our Sherco power plant in about 5 years. It's going to be replaced with a gas plant. But at the end of the day, when we shut down Sherco, we're going to lose about 150 full-time employees. It'll be replaced by about 25 to 30 employees at the gas plant. It takes fewer people. And we are going to have a very big deficit in people that work, full-time employees, in that whole base, that whole industrial base. So what we're trying to do here is improve the industrial park so that we can bring more industry in to help offset not only the tax base loss, but the big job loss that we're going to be seeing. We do have, it does look like we will be getting Northern Metals moving in from Minneapolis to Becker. We are very happy to have them. And I know that Representative Dean will love to support this bill because of that. But Northern Metals will only replace about 50% of the jobs that we're going to lose. So that's not the full fix that we would need just to bring it up to even. And the only way that we can really fully accommodate bringing in additional industry is to upgrade the access points into our industrial park. This is a $3.3 million ask. And just as a side note for folks, Becker is one of the few cities in Minnesota that does not receive any LGA due to the money that we get from the power plants. We are a non-LGA city. So normally, I mean, folks could say, well, you could potentially use LGA towards something like this. This is not an option that's available to us. So we need to come before the committee to ask for your consideration. With me today, I have Mayor of Becker, Tracy Bertram, and I also have the City Administrator, Greg Przinski, and I will turn it over to them.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the Capital Investment Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today and ask for your support. My name is Tracy Bertram. I'm the mayor of the city of Becker. Becker is a robust city of about 5,000 people in the heart of Sherburne County, where we are located midway between St. Cloud and Elk River on U.S. Highway 10. Even though Becker is known for many things, most notably Becker Furniture World, Pebble Creek Golf Course, and Xcel Energy's Sherco Power Generating Plant. With the announcement that the retirement of the two coal-fired generators at the Sherco plant starting in 2023, Central Minnesota, Sherburne County, and the City of Becker will be in a position to lose jobs. We will see significant reductions in economic activity and recognize a substantial loss in tax revenues. Sherco is currently 75% of Becker's and approximately 15% of Sherburne County's tax revenue. A key element for the transition away from the coal-based economy is industrial development. The city is working to support and facilitate commercial and industrial growth to offset the loss of commerce, jobs, and tax revenue. In addition to providing tax revenue, a vibrant industrial park will support local businesses, attract new residents, and help counterbalance job losses at the Sherco plant. Significantly, Becker is taking the lead in the development of a rail-served industrial park space. In order for city leadership to understand the transportation needs and challenges, we have conducted a study of the transportation issues associated with the growth and the development of an expanded industrial park. The city has met with many of the stakeholders, including Sherburne County officials, the Initiative Foundation, MnDOT, Xcel Energy, BNSF Railroad, and the potential industrial park users to establish a strategy for our transportation. The strategy will support commerce by enhancing traffic connections throughout the Becker Industrial Park. The identified improvements will be implemented in multiple phases, including extension and realignment of our Hancock Street, installation of a rail spur, and the alignment of the county roads to improve safety and access to Highway 10. House File 3342 helps Becker launch Phase 1. The improvements to the industrial park will be critical to meet the overall demand of the Becker Industrial Park, including the additional traffic generated by Northern Metal Recycling. The estimated cost of this phase is $3.3 million and will straighten and realign the roads in the industrial park to provide a better and safer access to Highway 10 and extend the Hancock South and the installation of water and sewer lines to accommodate. So I thank you for your time and your support on House File 3342.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Przinski, you have comments?
Not at this time. I'm here to answer questions if the committee or chair would have any.
All right. Questions, members? Representative Uglum.
This is to Representative Neuberger. I'm very concerned. Will this affect my access to the subway shop when I'm going up to the lake on Friday nights? Is that going to be okay? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it all depends on how much you eat, Representative Uglum.
No,
I'm
more
serious. If you get too big to fit through the door, it'll affect your access.
There you go. Mr. Chair, a more serious question. I know Northern Metals will generate a lot of truck traffic and a lot of heavy truck traffic and things. I'm assuming you're doing a traffic study on that and things. And I'm assuming there's design features in there to make sure that it's safe when they're accessing Highway 10 because of the high traffic levels.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that? How many trucks do you have any idea?
We're anticipating about 200 trucks a day in addition. And we're accommodating, the study has accommodated that we would have an access point from the west and from the east, from the east side. And we would love to be able to do a traffic control area with a stoplight, but again, you know, phase one doesn't include that at this time. So we'll have to reroute those trucks to use a safe access point for them and for our citizens.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor or Mr. Brzezinski, have you applied for any TED or BDPI grants?
I'll let you take it.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question, and we are actually running up to that right now. That's what triggered the study is the grant funding, whether that's TED or the USCDA. They needed some additional engineering feasibility report done. So we are running up to that. It looks like we'll be using that or applying for those grant funds for phase two.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brzezinski. Representative Sock?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need a rerun on a couple of just base facts. You're losing 150 jobs. Mm-hmm. So I think I remember that. And somebody is bringing back 50 jobs? A first phase of something?
Northern Metal will...
Madam Mayor?
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Northern Metal will bring us a potential 85 jobs at first, and then they will actually increase their workforce as time goes on.
Okay. And the thank you, Mr. Chair. The request then is the 3.3, and you've got a match of 3.3. Is that
Mr. Brzezinski?
Mr. Chair, for this first phase, we don't have a direct dollar for dollar match. We're anticipating phase two and three to be quite a bit more. So for phase one, this is the ask for the city and the project.
Representative Sock?
So I understand no match.
No match on this phase, correct.
I'm just trying to do the math of money spent per job, and it's just troublesome for me to get someplace, and I may be not including everything. That's why I was wondering how this is structuring itself. Thank you. I think that.
And what is the total cost with everything phased in?
Mr. Chair, we're expecting about $60 million.
Say that again, please.
We're expecting it to be about $60 million with all of the...
60?
60. Mm-hmm.
60. Yep. 60. Well, 3.3 million would get you a few feet along the way. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of those, and I'm not being critical of this one because I have one in Ramsey County too, where the decision always is, and I think Southern Minnesota has one that goes back to the Speaker Spigum days where we put infrastructure in a place that was going to lure California companies, and it's still undeveloped. And I think that's, you know, the chicken and egg thing. In my case, it's the old TCAP site where we're asked to build infrastructure in preparation. And one always wonders how close do we have to be to a developer signing on the line before we actually build that infrastructure. I think that's because yours is prospective. You're doing more a larger industrial park than you need for just that one project. You're hoping that would also attract other employers, as I understand it.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hausman, I've just been having a little mini conference here with Administrator Pruszynski, just confirming what I already know. First of all, I want to take you two steps back. This is a problem. This is an issue that was caused by a policy decision set forth by the legislature back in 2013. The state said, you will do this. You will shut down 1 and 2 because they're trying to meet these renewable energy standards and these clean power, this clean energy standards. That was part of the equation. The city of Becker, technically speaking, the retirement date for Sherco 1 and 2, those units, 2040. We would have plenty of time to really ramp up and to prepare for this. We didn't. We're losing units 1 and 2. We still have unit 3, but we're losing 1 and 2. We are getting a gas plant. We are losing 150 power plant jobs. These are strong back jobs. You get a college or you get a high school diploma, you go to work in the coal yard for $20 an hour with a diploma. And if you get involved with one of the trade unions, you can make it a really good career. We've got people that have spent their entire careers there that are making close to six figures because they were able to, they stayed there and they advanced through the ranks and really developed there. These types of jobs are going away. And these are the exact kind of jobs that we need in Minnesota because not every kid is college material. Now, we're losing 150 of these. We're getting approximately 80 back. There's potential for more, but there's no guarantee for more. And the only way that we're going to really be able to facilitate this site is to start developing it so that we don't have this bottleneck there and that we can get traffic in and we can get the transportation infrastructure built. Representative Sock said he's trying to figure out what the cost was for the jobs. It's more than just the jobs. It's the entire service revenue that's based on every job. We're looking for production jobs. And for every production job that you have, the standard formula is 5 service jobs connected to every production job. So if we lose 150 production jobs within about a 20-mile radius, you're looking at, you times that by 5, that's what you potentially lose in service-related jobs. So if the impact, Representative Sock, it's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. The impact is far-reaching. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to salvage a situation that we didn't ask for. At the end of the day, to finish the project the way we'd like to see it, it's going to be $60 million. But how do you eat an elephant? You do it one bite at a time. And by doing this, we can at least get we can use this. This, it's not like we're going to do this and it's not going to have any benefit. Whatever we do here, especially in this first phase, is going to be a direct benefit. It's going to get the ball rolling in the right direction. And hopefully, we'll find other funding mechanisms to come up with the rest of that. But we can't get this ball rolling until we give it a push, and this is the push that we need.
Thank you. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so I understand, it's $2.3 million for this initial infrastructure around phase one, and that's in the end going to bring $60 million total of the industrial park development and all those other types of things in the future. And you might come back to us, you might not, depending on how things work out for some of the phase two infrastructure moving forward, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean. Phase one, will we be coming back to ask for more? Well, I won't be. but suffice to say, if I do, I'll bring you something to eat. Suffice to say, will we be coming back for the additional $57 million? I don't know. Will we be able to generate that by other mechanisms? You bet. If we can do that, we will. If we're able to get it through other means, we will. But at this point in the game, we get nowhere unless we tee up the ball and hit it. And this is what we're trying to do.
Representative Uklum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to the city administrator or whatever. I drive by this thing all the time. This is an existing industrial park that we're talking about. You have numerous big warehouses there already and some big industrial concerns within the confines that we're talking about right now. Is that correct?
Mr. Pruszynski.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. We've got roughly 4,000 undeveloped acres that could be developed industrially. We have quite a few businesses, including the Sherco Power Plant and a paper mill and whatnot, this opens up another section of that property for development industrially.
Mr. Chair, Zabugla,
you mentioned the paper mill, Liberty Paper there. And they're a big employer, too, aren't they? Mr. Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, yes, they are. About 142 jobs.
All right. Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, now, we've been talking about jobs, and this does get a little bit afield, but you were talking about the 150 jobs, and obviously that's going to have a big impact on the community. My question is, XL's a very large company. How are they handling the reduction in the workforce? Will many of them find employment somewhere else in the company, or I'm kind of interested in the individual impact as well as the community impact that you've shared already. Or are they going to give early retirement incentives? What's happening there?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, one of the agreements that I had with many of the discussions I had with Excel is that nobody gets a pink slip. Nobody. If that was the case, you'd see my Irish blood start to boil, and you don't want to see that. What Excel Energy has done is they've been very responsible. They've been a good partner in this. People are being offered either early retirement or they're offered the option to transfer to other jobs at other locations. So no one's getting a pink slip in this endeavor. The other thing that Excel Energy has promised to do is to open negotiations to help Becker by offering a reduced rate in power for large power provider users. So we have big industry that does come in. One of the things that they will be able to do to attract big business, more jobs, because you had talked about some of they had been mentioned that some of these projects just don't go through, but we're able to salt this a little bit, and Excel is going to offer some reduced rates to large energy users in order to attract replacement business. Right now, there are two other companies that are potentially looking at relocating. We don't have firm commitments from that, and we're not able to expound on that because of confidentiality issues. But the folks sitting here, Tracy and Greg, they're working double time to try to salvage this situation. And this bill is the first step in the right direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Well, Representative Neuberger, any final comments?
No, thank you. I just thank you, the chair, and for the committee for your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, House File 2820, Representative Zerwatz. Welcome, Representative Zerwatz. We've been looking forward to this.
Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Chair, as I told you a couple different times, I have probably one of the most exciting bonding proposals the committee will hear this session. It deals with Lake Horno in Elk River and dredging the lake to get the sediment and sludge and muck off of the bottom. It does not get more thrilling for that. I promised the chairman I would invite him out for the ribbon cutting for the bottom of the lake. It'll be great.
I believe you said you'd dig up some dirt on me if I didn't show up.
I said, well, we got enough dirt. Mr. Chair, members, the bill looks to do to appropriate bonds of $1.5 million for a little less than to cover a little less than half the cost of dredging the lake. Lake Horno within the city of Elk River is actually a dammed portion of the Elk River that feeds directly in to the Mississippi River. Because of that dammed portion that was that used to be a hydroelectric dam, the lake was created, and as the water comes down from the watershed, it hits the dam and sediments settle out. The lake was last dredged nearly 20 years ago. The entire cost of that project at that time was borne by the city of Elk River. There's some pretty neat articles about what was found at the bottom of the lake after 20 years ago when it was first dredged. I think an old vehicle from decades earlier. And so it's kind of an interesting story. But at that time, when the lake was dredged out, the folks that did the surveying said it would likely last about two decades. And then the main difference between the two dredging projects, the previous one 20 years ago and the one we're proposing today, is the challenge is during that period 20 years ago, there was construction occurring with a new housing development that was on the lakeshore that provided a very natural and easy way to take the dredged material and bring it up onto land and to utilize it for the development project. The higher cost is now in having to ship the sediment away. And so that's a bit of a cost there. I have the mayor of the city of Elk River, Mayor John Dietz, with me, and then an environmental staff person from the city of Elk River that can talk about some of the details and numbers of the project from the report that they got completed just last week.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mayor. John Dietz. I am the mayor of Elk River. On the positive side, beautiful Lake Orono serves as a focal point for area residents, commuters, businesses, and vacationers. Elk River is designated as Energy City and branded as a town that is powered by nature, which highlights our commitment to natural resources and innovation. Our image is strengthened by the numerous parks, trails, recreation options in our area. At the center of all is Lake Orono. When driving through town on Highway 10, drivers are surrounded by the lake's beauty on both sides, making it a focal point of our region. Lake Orono provides benefits both economically and recreationally. It is a destination for those looking to swim, tube, canoe, paddleboard, and fish, just to name a few. This amenity is something we are proud to have. With that pride comes sadness to watch the continued decline in the health and aesthetic of the lake, and thus the negative side to having Lake Orono geographically located in our municipal boundary. Lake Orono receives over 97% of its water from an upstream watershed. The city of Elk River contributes to less than 3% of the water in the lake. This regional runoff is causing a decline in water quality and sedimentation of the lake to the point of choking out native plants and limiting recreational activities. Lake Orono has a large 611 square miles of contributing drainage area, 71% of Sherburne County, 67% of Benton County, and small portions of Mille Lacs County and Morrison County drain to the lake. Again, this is an issue much further ranging than Elk River or Sherburne County alone. Financial support from the state of Minnesota is needed to address this problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Brandon Wisner, City of Elk River Stormwater Coordinator. Hit a couple points here. Being that the lake does fill up with sediment, we're keeping that sediment, for the most part, out of the Mississippi River, which is just downstream. With that, we've done modeling. We know roughly how much of the contributing area is going in there, and we work closely with the Sherburne County Soil and Water Conservation District as far as how this whole watershed does work. Roughly 8,000 cubic yards of sediment is deposited in the lake per year, so we're looking at anywhere from 120 to 160,000 cubic yards since the lake was dredged previously. Luckily, the sediment testing that we just got done over the winter here showed that the sediment is not contaminated to the level it has to go to a landfill. It can be land applied, such as we talked about before. So cost-wise, we're very fortunate to see that it is clean in the grand scheme.
Well, thank you. And the sludge that you're taking out, I know you're taking it away. What are you going to do with it?
Mr. Chair, we've identified three sites within 7 miles The reason we want the sites to be close is it keeps the cost down per cubic yard is what we'd be charged on that. Two are directly within the city limit, and one is outside in a township. So to do that, we'd want the material as dry as possible. The city owns the dam, so we're able to draw down the lake with our own staff and not have to contract out for that. So that's a huge cost savings there to be able to draw it down, and most likely in the winter, to get the sediment dry and then excavate and haul out from there.
Thank you. And I understand you have a problem with the lake filling up with sludge and dirt. Is there anything that can be done to keep it from coming in the first place?
Mr. Chair, members, I think just the way the watershed works and the flow of the water to the dam and then over the dam, and the lake isn't that large to begin with, I think the damming of the lake creates a catch basin for sedimentation that's settling out. One of the biggest challenges of being on this end of the tributary system is everything kind of runs downhill, and we're the catch basin for it. And so I know with the Sherburne County Watershed Conservation District and the other counties' work, I know a lot of work is being done upstream to mitigate runoff and pollution issues. And so a lot of work upstream could help us out immensely.
Thank you. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not so sure who's the best to answer this, whether it's Mr. Wisner or other folks. So my understanding is the dam was reconstructed in the late 70s, and shortly thereafter that, the accumulation of the silt started to accelerate, and I'm wondering, have you stopped to look at the design of the dam? Is there anything that can be done in modern dam design that could actually sort of, you know, make sure that, I'm not saying that we don't do this, but make sure that that accumulation is at a rate that's really more amenable to the economics of what may have to happen. So hopefully it's not 10 years from now you're coming back. Maybe it's 25 or 30 years that you might come back.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, to that point, the city does not have the hydro dam permit from the state anymore. We have looked at getting that again, having it operate as such. From what we've been able to figure out, it's a pretty tough process. I don't know. I haven't seen the detail and direct link between when that was decommissioned and then when the sediment increased, you know, accumulation-wise. My thought is, you know, it is a sandier soil county. There's a lot of farming, agriculture upstream in the watershed, you know, runoff, you know, potentially that way, and just a change of rain events with that could have been the reason why. Now that we're actually water quality sampling our sources, we have a actual, you know, numbers to show what is coming in, which obviously was probably not done pre-71, is my guess. Okay. That answers your question.
Yeah. Representative Ugla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who wants to take this, but Representative Zerwas, you mentioned that you're working with the Soil and Water Conservation District and the other conservation people in your area there. I'm assuming that Elk River, there's a lot of upstream bank stabilization going on to eliminate some of this. Are you guys working with the DNR also on this project?
Representative Zerwas.
Well, I'll start, Mr. Chair and Representative Ugham, by saying that we work very closely with the DNR for the process of managing the dam and lowering or raising the water level within the lake. I know the last time the dredging occurred, there was a pretty extensive process throughout the DNR to get the permitting process and the approvals through the department to be able to undertake that project two decades ago. I think perhaps Mr. Wizard can discuss what has happened in the last 18 months or so.
Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we work very closely with the Sherburne County Soil and Water Conservation District because, like, from our extent, we can only deal with what's in our city, which happens to be the entire lake only and a very small portion of the actual river. We've worked closely enough with them, me and their staff person, that we don't actually always apply for clean water grants if they have a project that upstream of us that are actually going to help prevent sediment coming into the lake. So we coordinate that way so we're not competing against kind of the same goal. And then as far as the DNR question goes, yes, we've met with them previously about this project and the potential of it, gave them the rundown on the whole history since 98 and prior. So they are aware of it. We continue to have emails, and another progress meeting will be next week as well. And really, with this, you know, the project's not going to happen unless the funding is there, and we'll continue to work with the authorities or the regulatory authorities on the permitting side.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Uglum.
Mr. Wisner, I just have two questions. For the lake itself, with your shoreline, you mentioned it's a sandy county, and that's for darn sure up there and everything. Do you have bank stabilization plans for the lake itself so you're not sloughing off some of the sediment at the lake level?
Mr. Wisner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't see her.
Yeah, it's Uglum.
Uglum. We're actually very fortunate in that we regulate the water level of the lake. It only bounces in elevation at most 1.2 feet when there's heavy rains upstream because we open and adjust the gates according to our manual for the dam. So with that, we don't have extensive soil erosion because the level of the lake is not bouncing up and down. So we're fortunate there. The Soil and Water Conservation District has done surveys around the lakeshore, and for the most part, over 90% of the banks are stable. And a lot of that has to do with they're not large bluffs. We don't really have that with the lake. Upstream, there may be some outside of the city, but the last project that was done, I want to say that was on near the cemetery, and that was a good 10 years ago that they restabilized that, and it has not failed since. So,
one last question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Have you applied for any legacy money or any of the other environmental monies that are out there?
Mr. Wisner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, we have not on this. With that is any of the clean water funding is for preventative measures. 90% of the water is coming from outside the city. We have no control over that. Only 3% has come from the city, which we've done stormwater modeling on that too, and we treat it very well considering the age of our city. The legacy money, as far as my understanding, is tied to, you know, fishing, whether it be humans fishing or improving the fishery of the lake. We would definitely look at doing this with this project. If we're going to dredge the lake, we're going to improve that habitat and the ecological benefits. Since we're in there, kind of two birds with one stone.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, members, prior to submitting, getting the bill draft and something I worked with House staff and tried to figure out what's the best way to approach getting some support for the city, whether it was through the legacy funds or through a bonding request, and I was directed this direction. I think the city of Champlin, I think is it Zumbrota?
Lake Zumbro,
and a few others in recent years have had dredging projects that were capital investment dollars have been used to fund those projects.
Thank you. Where's everyone back?
That was my question too.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Mayor.
I would just like to mention that the total project cost we're looking at for this is $3.5 to $4 million. And the residents, the property owners on Lake Orono, will be paying a substantial amount of this. We've had meetings with them. We're talking in the neighborhood of $750,000 in addition to their property taxes. And then the city would make up the $1-plus million balance.
Any other comments or questions from members? Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Now, House File 3226, Representative Hoppe. Representative Hoppe, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This is the CREP bonding request, and I believe in the materials that you have, it says $45 million. It actually should be 33. See, it's getting better all the time. And with that, I can tell you why I like CREP and why I think this is a good plan for the state of Minnesota, or I can turn it over to the experts and let them tell you what's in the bill and why it's scientifically a good idea.
Who can do it the quickest?
I'll turn it over to the experts.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill today and Representative Hoppe for carrying it. It's an important water quality-focused program that soil and water conservation districts use to help achieve their clean water goals across Minnesota. Just as a, by way of a little bit of background, this is obviously not the first time you've heard about the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. Last year, we want to thank you for last year's appropriation of $10 million that went toward the program. And we are here before you again looking to kind of close out the funding need of the five-year program. So it's a local, state, and federal conservation partnership. Local SWCDs work with a landowner to get them enrolled, look at the conservation priorities on their landscape, put together an application, submit it to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for ranking and review. Those get done in batches. Once a landowner receives approval of getting funding for the program, the SWCD will help put together a conservation plan depending on which of the four program practices that we're looking at, whether it's a wellhead protection area, a floodplain wetland restoration, or a non-floodplain wetland restoration, or a filter strip adjacent to a riparian area. So the conservation plan is completed, and then we move forward with the practice installation, whether it's seeding or dirt movement or construction of the wetland restoration. The SWCDs, I should back up just a moment to make clear that we're working voluntarily with interested landowners. This is a voluntary incentive-based program, and we've enjoyed that with SWCDs, working with landowners in this 54-county area, which geographically is southeast, southwest, west-central. I think the northern reach of it is we're looking at Clay and Becker counties. The reason for that geographical distribution, just real briefly, is we're looking at that's where the highest amounts of phosphorus loading, sediment loading, and nitrates are. That's a the program's a 15-year Conservation Reserve Program contract through the FSA, the USDA Farm Service Agency. And after that, the permanent RIM reserve easement kicks in that takes that into perpetuity. So the conservation protections are there. The investment for Minnesota is there in the long term. And that's the reason that this is a bondable project. This is the one conservation-related program that SWCDs administer that is bondable. The need, just real quickly, This is a program need for SWCDs to achieve their clean water goals. We know that there are impairments in our waters and significant challenges that lay before us, especially with agricultural producers, and this is a way that we can help them with that challenge by taking some of these marginal agricultural lands out of production and giving them a rental payment for the first 15 years, providing them 100% cost share of the project, and then a lump sum reinvested in Minnesota reserve payment. All of these things help the landowner. And they're honestly a good infusion into the local economies, you know, that trickle-down effect of a $500 million program across 54 counties. That's contractors, seed dealers, grocery stores, hardware stores. I think the impact of it is pretty far-reaching and outside of just our water quality and habitat goals. The reason that we're here before you speaking about bonding, just a little bit more on the flexibility of bonding dollars as compared to some of the appropriations that are leveraged for this program. We have Clean Water Fund appropriations. We have Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations, LCCMR appropriations that all combine to bring us to the $116 million total that we have in appropriations to date. But Clean Water Fund appropriations are specific either to riparian buffer zones or to wellhead protection areas or to wetland restoration practices. So we have these kind of funnels of money that some of these appropriations are entering into for specific practices. The bonding dollars does provide a greater level of flexibility in filling the gaps where we might need a little bit more funding in one area or another, depending on where we're at with signups. I think, Mr. Chair, I would just close by saying again, thank you very much for hearing this issue. It's an important one for soil and water conservation districts. And again, thank you, Representative Poppe, for carrying the bill.
Mr. Holman.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you again for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Todd Holman. I'm the Mississippi Headwaters Program Director for the Nature Conservancy Office in Brainerd. I'm here as a practitioner, one of the people, not unlike Sheila describes, as working on the land to help with the implementation of the RIM program. And so I come here to express the Nature Conservancy's support for House File 3226 that would provide bonding dollars for the Reinvest Minnesota RIM program. The iconic Mississippi River, as it leaves Lake Itasca, most of us are familiar with that site and that location, moves its way through Minnesota through communities. In addition to the river's iconic standing, the river, its tributaries, its northern Minnesota lakes, and the connecting groundwater systems really provide the vital drinking water for every private landowner in that community of northern Minnesota, the Mississippi Headwaters, and supplies the healthy water for the drinking water dependent cities of St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, and then on and on down the Great River to the Gulf of Mexico. So really a strong focus of why that water resource is important. This RIM program, we realize that cleaning up the 54 counties that CREP 3 is focused on, vitally important. The Nature Conservancy has long supported this bonding request for that. But to parse out the $33 million ask for this portion of the bonding, about $3 million of that would be, we were hoping the committee would, or the commission would consider allowing that $3 million nuanced part of the RIM to be used for working lands in the Headwaters region to protect the healthy water so that we really are making an investment in protecting the lower cost of protecting high-quality water in addition to the work, the great work that we're doing with the CREP program. Over the last few years, the Nature Conservancy, with its science staff and in collaboration with DNR and other partners, has developed a strategic spatial representation. We can map where to focus a RIM application, protection dollars in the Mississippi Headwaters area to get the biggest bang for the conservation dollar spent. And so we know where, we know what, we can measure our metrics. And then finally, the Nature Conservancy, and this is certainly the work I do, we have working partnerships on the ground that stitch together the soil and water conservation district capacities, so local governments are part of these partnerships. The agencies, the DNR, Board of Water and Soil, other agency supports, and the nonprofit communities that work in the Mississippi headwaters are all talking to each other and working together. And so we know that if this commission appropriates those funds for Working Lands Rim, that we can coordinate to deliver that onto the landscape in the most strategic and important places. Finally, we recognize there are a lot of requests for bonding dollars, but we hope you'll make an investment in the Mississippi a priority as you make your decisions. And thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Soil and Water Conservation District lady. Excuse me, I forgot your name. But anyway, I look at Bernard Sams put in $15 million worth of CREP that yielded $34.5 million with a federal match. Does REM get even a bigger match than that? You invest money in REM, it comes back, depending on how many states take it, five, six times.
Or does it change?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I believe the leveraging the match is essentially 2.1 to 1. So for every dollar that the state puts forward, we get $2.10 in federal contribution.
Representative Gunther.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me what the difference between CREP and REM is as far as land ownership and stuff like that? How long do people control your land?
Ms. Manny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther. So the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, or CREP, combines a 15-year FSA CRP contract. So the 15 years is in a contract with CRP through the Farm Service Agency, and from there on is the perpetual easement. Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program easements. So all Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program easements that I'm aware of have a perpetual nature.
Where have we got there?
Thank you. I know the CREP program pays approximately 80% of the value of the land. And I'm looking at buffers, for example. You buy a buffer strip for a mile, I think 12 square miles or 6.1 square miles, one or the other. And you buy that land and they pay you 80% of what the value of that land is, and then they pay you so much for a year for the 15 years. Is that the way you understand it also?
Ms. Vanny?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, the CRP payments are based on rental rates in the county. So what you get for an annual payment for the Conservation Reserve Program, the federal side of this, is going to be based on what those rental rates are. The Reinvested Minnesota Reserve Program payment is going to be based on the assessed township values, but I'm not sure. I would have to double check whether 80% of the assessed value is generally what happens to be the final RIM payment. It is a one-time payment that you get at the close of the RIM easement that's part of the CREP.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The gentleman from Nature Conservancy reminds me that when Nature Conservancy first came forward with this package, they supported the $30 million for CREP, the $3 million for working lands, but also $3 million for Forests of the Future. And because the Nature Conservancy is here today, and I think we have the DNR person in the audience who could talk about Forests of the Future, I wonder if we could squeeze in one more minute that one you would find on the DNR bonding request for what is there. If you would be willing to squeeze in one more minute.
I would just say quickly, as Mr. Bo is joining, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I would just say quickly, as Mr. Bo is joining us, the Nature Conservancy is, in fact, supporting House File 3559 to support $7 million for Minnesota Forests for the Future.
Welcome. Identify yourself,
Mr.
please.
Chair, members, for the record, Forrest Bohm, the Director of Forestry with Minnesota DNR, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about Minnesota Forest for the Future. Forest for the Future program is about permanently protecting large blocks of working forests from conversion to other non-forest uses. Conversion of private forest land can happen in many different ways, and it has a substantial impact and influence on our habitat, our timber management options, access to forest land for public recreation and management, and also has long-term effects on water quality, and that's why we have a program like this. The legislature has funded this over many different years in many different forms. We've received Outdoor Heritage money. We've received bonding money in the past. We've received LCCMR money, Forest Legacy programs from actually the federal part. So that's kind of the federal part of our program. But Minnesota Forest for the Future is the state part, and we sometimes put those funds together, just like CRP and RIM, and other times operate them very separately. So we have, again, I think the main difference between RIM and Forest for the Future is the forest piece is always trying to preserve the highest quality forest and timberland for the future. Forest for the Future program also includes public access. So when we purchase an easement, or even in sometimes for the future, we purchase a fee title, small block inside the confines of a state forest, just to tie that up, so we don't have so many boundary issues. That includes public access, allows for pedestrian access or motorized access on established trails. And again, I had already mentioned that sometimes we use easements. For the most part, we do that. Sometimes we use the program and do fee acquisition. So in a nutshell, Minnesota Forest for the Future.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've sat on this committee now. This is my second go-around. And I don't recall if we, you know, had a request from RIM 2 years ago. Maybe it was in the bill and I just didn't know it. But
did we?
Okay. Which portion then of is the $45 million all for the purchase of land that, you know, is you assume to be a bondable project? I didn't quite catch that. Could you cover that?
Ms. Danny.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. First, I believe the amount that we talked about should be $33 million in the bill. $3 million of that would be for the Working Lands Reinvest in Minnesota program, easement program in the headwaters that the Nature Conservancy spoke to. The other $30 million would go towards the RIM reserve component of Minnesota's CREP program. And that would finalize the state's contribution toward the program, as I understand it. So we would have a complete funding package that would fully leverage the $350 million of federal funding.
So, Mr. Chair, so could you explain, you're saying complete the project, so you will have a package of land that is being managed and monitored, et cetera, and improved, but that's the end of it? It's complete? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, that completes what we understand to be the funding needs. It does not complete the actual on-the-ground applications and approvals of the projects, the installations of the projects. That will still take place over the course of probably the next few years. But we have, I believe, $40 million in applications that have been submitted by the SWCDs to date. The sign-up periods began, I want to say, late last spring, early summer, and we've been doing sign-ups in batching periods since then. I'm not sure if any of those easements have closed out the whole process that it takes to finalize an easement, including, you know, title, insurance, reviews, and all of that, and whether they've gotten to the actual conservation implementation portions of any of them yet. We're looking at a multiple-year process of actually getting all of those funds encumbered and spent on the ground, if that answers your question.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I mean, it's a program I haven't heard as much detail about as I'd like, and maybe I could spend some time with you and just get a bigger picture. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wonder if it might just be helpful to look at the bill's first paragraph. Just as the Forest for the Future, he said, our purpose for doing this is to protect them on into the future from uses for other reasons. And the first paragraph, I think, makes so clear the outcome of this program, and that is to preserve, restore, create, and enhance wetlands and riparian lands, and to restore and enhance rivers and streams and associated uplands in order to protect soil and water quality, support fish and wildlife habitat, reduce flood damage, and provide other public benefits. In other words, after you've done all of this, that is the wonderful outcome for the future. I mean, so both of them, I think, if you think about our motivation for doing them, it is that is going to be the outcome that is there for everyone in the future who enjoys that.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hausman and members. I think that encompasses the kind of the heart of this. I like this because it's voluntary. Landowners can choose to do it. They're not taking cropland. People, you know, the landowner gets to decide. We're getting money from Washington. For the dollars that we put in, we're getting 2 point whatever it is back. We don't get a lot of money direct from Washington, and it doesn't stay here in St. Paul. It goes from Washington to the landowner, and this is voluntary, and it's not taking out cropland. If you try to put in a cornfield or a bean field, they're not going to take it. This is for riparian land that is, I think it helps with the buffer issue. I don't see a downside to this, and if I didn't mention this, it's voluntary. Members, I appreciate your time and your listening.
Any other further comments? Then thank you very much. And members, we meet again tomorrow on a special occasion. Tomorrow we're going to vote. Yes, we're actually going to vote tomorrow.
On what, Mr. Chair?
RFA.
Oh.
Rural Finance Authority. So until then, well, King, this case is closed.